Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, I'm thrilled to be joined by Claire DeLune, NBA writer for The Guardian and multi-time guest on the show. We're going to be discussing conference finals lessons for the Lakers. Before we get into it, Claire, how are you doing? How are you enjoying your offseason?
I'm good. I mean, it hasn't felt like that much of an offseason because I've been so busy, but it is weird. I do feel like a hole in my life where the arena was, you know, and it's so weird to not just be going there a couple times a week. Obviously, like, miss all of you guys that I get to cover basketball with. But yeah, it's been good. I mean, I think for the most part, it's been a really great playoff. So it's been really fun to watch as a reporter and as a basketball fan.
Let's start with OKC. OKC is in a unique position that we can't quite compare the Lakers situation or their roster flexibility, but my lesson from OKC is the value of versatility. And what I mean by that is OKC starts a double big look, but they can play a single big look with Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein, or Jalen Williams. And each of those three guys brings different things to the table in terms of their strengths and weaknesses offensively and defensively. They can go to a small ball look. We haven't really seen it much with J-Dub being out for most of the postseason, but there is a version of this group with J-Dub and Shea and Caruso and Dort and maybe Kayson Wallace or Jared McCain, where they can go small if they need to, but they can also problem solve in a variety of ways. And we just saw Game 5 versus San Antonio, the offense is in the mud. They have their worst offensive performance of the season. Game 4, no A.J. Mitchell, no J-Dub. They start Jared McCain, and he drops 20 points and has a big game. But we've also seen they need a little bit more defense. You put Alex Caruso, you put Kayson Wallace, Dort, whoever. So this is, again, I'm not going to compare the roster builds because the Lakers are not going to have as deep of a roster as OKC next season. Yeah. But I think looking at the Lakers situation, they have not had a double big look in about 5 years. They have even at times struggled with a single big look, depending on who's available. And I think there needs to be some more versatility and depth within the roster and rotation this summer, and just having different things you could throw out there and different ways to problem solve. Because it's felt like they've had one or two pitches that they've had to rely on these last few years. And I think just having a deeper bullpen with more options there, what would be one of my goals for the summer. So what do you make of that as a lesson, and how do you think the Lakers can go about achieving that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, however you phrase it, like versatility, depth, I think is the takeaway. And it's funny because those are both, they're sort of just like different ways of looking at the same thing. It's like you need players down the roster who you can use to throw different pitches, who you can use in different moments, who you can use if someone gets hurt. And that makes you, that depth makes you more versatile, you know? And I think something we've learned from especially the last few years of the playoffs is I think versatility is almost like second to having, you know, one of the best players in the world on your roster, which I think is still an evergreen thing you need to win a championship. Like if you don't have a top, you know, eight guy, like I don't think you're going to win a championship. But even beyond that, I think versatility has proven like so important to success in the postseason because it's so matchup dependent as far as like when you see how far people go. And it's almost more about like how well do you match up with the team in front of you than it is about how good are you as a team, how high is your ceiling, and you need to be able to match up well with a bunch of different kinds of teams, you know. And so that versatility is super important, and I think that's been OKC's superpower is they can kind of play a bunch of different ways. To your point, they can match up well with pretty much anybody, and that is a testament to the roster build and the depth of their roster. You know, to your point, I don't know how replicable that is for the Lakers in one offseason. I think they're just about as far away from that as you could possibly be in the sense of they're probably the most top-heavy roster in the NBA right now, I would say. Like, as far as the, not as far as like they're the least deep roster, but as far as the sort of distance between the level of their top-end talent and the level as soon as you get to guys like 4 through 15, it's just such a wide gulf in talent there, and it's so slim on talent, especially once you get out of the starting roster. So they definitely need, to LeBron's point on Mind the Game, you know, they need a more talented roster. And if they lose LeBron this year, they're going to need to fill that spot as well. And so they'll be sort of like starting from behind the eight ball a little bit. So I think, yeah, that's probably, you know, number one thing to me this summer would be building a deeper, more versatile roster. Even if you can't hit a home run in that department, can you hit a single? Can you hit a double? Like, can you make incremental, you know, changes to the roster to make you just a little bit better at certain spots than you were last year, even if you don't obviously build a 10, 12 man rotation in one season?
It's a massive challenge because you have the Austin Reeves contract situation, you have the LeBron contract situation, you have several of your other free agents, Rui Hachimura, Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard. The Lakers are in a tough spot where they're like, it's easy to run it back if they want to, with they could just operate over the cap and just keep everybody and maybe do a couple of smaller tweaks. But I think there needs to be a larger overhaul here. I think they should have at least half of the rotation be new players. And for me, looking at some of these things that OKC could do, like, I mean, it starts with the defensive end, where I think in general they need more defensive talent, more two-way talent, ideally. I think they also need a double big look, and that probably means one of the bigs has to be able to space the floor to some degree. You look at the groups that have been going double big, for the most part, they can at least space the floor to like 20 feet, if not outright past the three-point line. The Lakers have not had the big man depth to do that. I would be hoping, if I'm them, to acquire like a $20+ million center, and then also find some depth at the back end of the roster. And like, that's been an issue for them. You mentioned it. Like, I just said this on a recent show. I think if you look at the last 5 years and you aggregated all 30 teams, 10 to 15 spots on their rosters, the Lakers are in the bottom 10 at a minimum, if not bottom five. And that's like them alongside like the Kings and like some of these like bad, perennially awful teams. They're right there with them. That's been one of the real weaknesses, I think, of their roster building lately. So whether it's through the draft and keeping that 25 pick, identifying some second round talent, identifying some undrafted guys that you want to sign to two ways or try out in summer league, also finding some vet minimum guys that actually hit and are closer to the archetypes that you need. Like, they're going to have to get creative, but I think there's a ton of pressure this summer.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what the Lakers do this summer and sort of how they approach that glaring, not just holes, glaring cavern in the roster. I feel like it would be like the most Lakers thing ever to just ignore all of that and go get Giannis and just bank on the fact that your top two players are better than the top two in any other team you're going to play and hope that that's good enough, because I feel like that's very quintessential to, you know, their identity as a franchise. I think I've heard you say before that they don't really have a type of player, and that's kind of part of the problem as far as like you see these other teams like OKC. I think part of that depth and part of what's so impressive about their versatility and their depth comes down to they're so dogmatic in the way they build their roster, and they have a very specific type of player that they go for, and they go seek that player out, whether it's through the draft or like identifying like a Jared McCain and being like, this is an OKC Thunder type of player, like we're going to go target him via trade. And I feel like the Lakers version of that is just stars. Like, they just love the biggest names and they go after them whenever possible. And I feel like that's just sort of been true of this franchise for as long as I can remember. So it would feel very Lakers-y to just ignore all the advice you just gave and go after Giannis. But I hope that they can see from the last four teams standing, and really the last three teams left standing, because I think Cleveland has maybe just as many issues as the Lakers do in some ways, you know, as far as like how far away they are from contending. And if the Lakers were in the Eastern Conference, I think they could have easily made the East Finals. So I think maybe taking the Cavs out of it to some degree, but the lesson is not go get Giannis if you look at the Knicks, the Thunder, and the Spurs, in my opinion.
Let's take a detour here and get into this for a second, because okay. I agree with you in a vacuum. Like, my ideal version of this roster build would be the big three plus a bunch of depth. And I think the Lakers need a new starting center and a new two-way wing. And if you slotted in an upgrade over DeAndre Ayton, an upgrade over Marcus Smart with Luka, LeBron, and Austin, and then you have Marcus and Rui as your sixth and seventh men, maybe you add another center and you kind of have a couple backups there between Jackson and someone else, and you go out and get a discount 3-and-D wing as like a bench guy. Like, that's your top 9 or 10 guys. I would love that rotation. I just think as we go through the finances of this, it gets really complicated as to how you fit in LeBron and his salary. Austin, they'll keep on that cap hold. But then when we get to Marcus and Rui, it gets like, just between LeBron, Marcus, and Rui, you could get to that $49 million that the Lakers are going to have in cap space pretty quickly. Easily. Right? And you could go over that. And that's where you could operate as an above the cap team. So realistically, it probably means you have to lose one of those three. And if you lose any of those three, like, LeBron is on the high side of, if you lose LeBron, you're losing your second or third best player and the guy who just carried you to a first round series win. And like, that's a ton of offense that you need to, in leadership and just all these things that LeBron brings, you have to somehow replace that. If you lose Marcus or Rui, it's like you're either losing your best shooter and a guy who's been a playoff riser for you, or you're losing your best two-way player and a guy that was your defensive captain this year. So losing any of those three would be a huge loss for the Lakers. And so I think they're going to try to prioritize like keeping all three of those guys. But then when you look at how much money is remaining and how much flexibility they actually have to add to the roster, you can still probably add like a starter, but you're not going to add the two starters plus like some of the back end depth necessarily. So I just keep running into this theoretical ceiling of, if they just go the like, let's partly run it back and then make some tweaks, I don't think you're going to be good enough. So that's where Giannis comes in for me of, it would require, like, you might lose LeBron, or it would require LeBron to take a massive pay cut. And I don't know how he would feel about that. Maybe he would like the idea of those four players together. Maybe not. I don't know. But you at least have a guy who can go toe to toe with Wemby and Chet and that OKC front line in a playoff series. You have confidence that Giannis is going to hold his own in both of those matchups. You do pair Giannis and Luka together longer term as two top five guys. You're almost taking a short-term step back in terms of your depth. Like, you're going to have to build out the roster over like the next 1 to 2 years. But I feel like you might have enough top-end talent where it sort of offsets any depth concerns you have. But I don't know. I could be wrong on that. I guess between the two, I think if they can achieve my ideal version, I pick that one. If it's like, let's maybe add a fringe starter type and run it back versus add Giannis, I think I would rather add Giannis.
I would say my only two pieces of pushback for that, because I do agree that like, if you can't do a good job at trying to emulate the formula for what's working in the rest of the league, it does make sense to just sort of buck the formula entirely, no pun intended, and try and do something completely different. My pushback would be, if you're replacing LeBron with Giannis, ironically, even though Giannis is like 10 years younger than LeBron, to my knowledge, LeBron has never missed a playoff game. And in the postseason, regardless of what kind of season he's had, he's like one of the top 10 most reliable postseason providers in the league. Giannis
is the top 10 player this postseason.
Easily. And Giannis wasn't in the playoffs, like, not just because the Bucks weren't good enough to make it, but because
they weren't good enough to make it because he wasn't available for half the season.
Exactly. Like, he has missed either a significant amount of the regular season or a significant amount or all of the playoffs or both in all of the, you know, last several years since the championship run. And even in the championship run, he got really hurt. His leg bent in a direction that legs are not supposed to bend. And he just overcame that by just force of will. But you can't guarantee that like a 32-year-old version of Giannis would be able to even do that. So I don't think, if there was like a really reliable star that had Giannis's level of talent and also was like a LeBron like machine as far as health is concerned, it would make sense to put all your eggs in that basket maybe and just say, screw depth, this guy is so good, so reliable that we'll just bank on that. But to have Giannis's injury concerns in addition to that taking up all of the money that you could be using to like make your roster deeper, when your other main star is Luka, who as he's gotten older has had also more and more injury concerns, like that just seems like a little bit of a recipe for disaster to me.
That is totally fair. That is my biggest concern with the Giannis fit as well. I also think people tend to overcomplicate or overthink the basketball fit sometimes between stars. Like there are situations we could point to where it hasn't worked out. I think a lot of it has been due to injury though, which is furthering your point. But I think Luka and Giannis would figure it out. I just also think that there would be a level of sacrifice required that both play, like I think it would be the biggest sacrifice either player has had to make in their career, where Giannis would have to play far more off the ball than he ever has. Even when he played with Dame, he'd have to be more of a pick and roll screener and be more of a role man. And then Luka, I also think would probably have to adapt and play a little bit more off the ball to accommodate Giannis, and even more than he had to with LeBron and Austin. So I think there'd be elements of sacrifice for both players that I think they're both capable of making based on them both being in their prime, or maybe Giannis is about to exit his prime. Like, do they want to make that? Are they on board with making that? That's an open-ended question. But I was just curious.
That's all theoretical.
Yeah, it's all theoretical. Lakers do not have the best package for Giannis. I just mean
like the idea that they could make that sacrifice. It's like, yeah, they could, but we have for neither of them do we have a shred of actual evidence in the totality of their careers that they would make those sacrifices, because they're both players where historically you've really had to just build the roster around them and the way they like to play. And you saw, like, with Giannis in Milwaukee with Dame, like, he just, part of the reason that didn't work is because he just really wasn't willing to budge very much on the way that he plays. So I'm probably lower on it than most people, but like, obviously if the options are like, keep last year's roster and replace Luke Kennard with someone like marginally better, or go get Giannis, like, yeah, probably go get Giannis. But I just have a lot of concerns about it. I wouldn't put it on like, unlike the DEFCON Russell Westbrook trade scale, I wouldn't put it at a Russell Westbrook, because nothing could potentially meet that level of catastrophe. But I would put it somewhere at like probably like a 6 on the Russell Westbrook DEFCON trade scale. You know, like it's not a 10, but I don't think it's like a 1 or a 2 either. It's like somewhere on the upper half to me.
That's fair. There's a ton of risk. The real answer here might just be that this is a multi-year build, and that the Lakers really aren't going to build the full championship level roster until like 2027, 28, or even 2028, 29. I know fans don't want to hear that, but that just might be the reality of the situation. Let's say they lose one of Rui or Marcus, and they add Mitchell Robinson and like Quentin Grimes to this roster. I don't think that's putting them on the same level as OKC or San Antonio. So I think they need a material jump up.
Yeah, I think probably the answer is a multi-year process. And that is why those of us who've been covering the team have been screaming from the rooftops for the last 2 or 3 years to be more aggressive about making incremental improvements, because now they're behind the eight ball in Luka's prime. You know, like it is hard to build a really good roster in one offseason. And that's precisely why you should be more aggressive about building a really good roster at every given opportunity, so that you aren't, you know, your paper is due in the morning and you have to write 3,000 words on, you know what I mean, whatever, the Roman Empire. Like,
well, I did write some work good on that late night papers the night before, morning of. Sometimes you could do it, but yeah, no, I get you.
But imagine how good those papers would have been.
Imagine if your paper had Jordan Goodwin on it. Imagine if you had Jordan Goodwin instead of spots 10 to 15, but. I digress. Let's move on to the New York Knicks. My lesson with the Knicks is protecting your stars on defense, in parentheses, from the perimeter. So there will be a part two to this a little bit later with one of my lessons. But if you look at the Knicks on paper, they have weaknesses at two of the most troubling spots, arguably the two most troubling spots to have weaknesses defensively. Cat, I think, has had a solid defensive postseason and is a big reason why the Knicks have made it to the finals. But Cat is not a traditional rim protector or defensive anchor. Then you have Jalen Brunson, who's barely 6 feet, if that, right? And is someone that, while he is built like a fire hydrant, he has some defense limitations and can be targeted and attacked off the dribble, attacked in the post, attacked in the middle of the floor. So they have two glaring weak spots and entry points into their defense. But what have they done over the last couple of years as they built this roster? They have flanked those guys with a ton of two-way perimeter talent with OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart and Deuce McBride, and even developing Landry Shamet, who was previously not known as a plus defender, into a guy who is now holding his own defensively. He was guarding Donovan Mitchell in crunch time of the Eastern Conference Finals. And so they have put the right types of role players around them. And even we could extend this to, like, looking at the bench, like a Mitchell Robinson as the backup to Cat and sort of the antithesis of Cat. This is just a pure, he's a pure dog. He's out there for the rebounding, the energy, the toughness, the physicality. And so it's basically been for New York, we have two weak spots in our rotation defensively. Everybody else has to be athletic, tough, physical, high motor, and even Brunson and Cat can kind of pick up on that and like start to buy into that. So I present that because the Lakers have two defensive liabilities to some degree with Austin and Luka. You could also say regular season LeBron at times is taking his foot off the gas. And like, so the Lakers have some things to navigate here with their stars having varying degrees of defensive limitations. But I think the Knicks blueprint here is everybody else in the rotation has to be a good defender, has to be high motor, has to be a certain level of toughness, physicality. They have some of those pieces. I look at Marcus Smart as the epitome of that. If Luka and Austin are out there, let's just put an awesome rim protector and an awesome wing defender, and we put those two players into the starting group. Now we can have some real two-way balance there. But what do you think of that? And are there some guys out there in free agency or on the trade market that you feel like really fit that bill for what the Lakers need?
I mean, I agree that that's why that works. I think the thing that I haven't seen people talk about as much that I think is like just relevant to mention is that part of the reason they were able to build that roster is that Jalen Brunson, who's their Luka, took a massive pay cut basically to sign an extremely team friendly deal. And so it's not like they're finding these guys on the margins. Like OG Anunoby makes a ton of money. He makes, I think, like 50 something million dollars, you know, like, so they have a very expensive roster.
They paid five picks for Mikal Bridges. Lakers don't have five picks to
trade. Right. Like they were able to facilitate this team build in part because of the sacrifices of Jalen Brunson to make it happen, you know? And so that's not to say that it's not replicable for the Lakers, but it's going to take some true like finesse, expertise, creativity in the team building to like find guys like a Jordan Goodwin, not to keep harping on that, on the margins and to get creative in that way. Like you're not going to be able to bring in big name talent like an OG Anunoby, like a Mikal Bridges to support your version of Jalen Brunson, because your version of Jalen Brunson is going to be making like $60 million. So you need to, that's all the more reason why it's important to build out the front office to be able to identify that talent, whether it's through the draft, whether it's international, whether it's guys on a two-way, and retain that talent. You know, and I think that that's been a big issue for the Lakers is that they haven't had a lot of hits in the draft, and they've done a lot better of a job identifying like two-way guys or like second round guys or undrafted guys. But then they have, you know, they have prioritized name chasing in lieu of retaining those guys. And so I think the takeaway from the Knicks build is, yes, this roster construction is a format that you should be using, but you can't think that you're going to be able to use your old methods to construct this roster, because given your cap situation, given, you know, the tools you have at your disposal, the lack of picks you have at your disposal, you're going to have to get really creative. And it might be guys no one's ever heard of. And it's just going to be on you and your talent identification to create a roster like that one.
I think that is all well said, and I agree. And just to be clear, like in the spirit of this exercise, I know none of these situations are like for like. It's more so like the spirit of what the Knicks did. I think the Lakers could, I think there's two ways to attack it. We're going to touch on one of the other ways to attack it later in the show. But every star has their strengths and weaknesses. And I think the smartest teams and the most well-run organizations and just the best rosters take their star as their North Star or their the top two or three guys. And it's like, okay, let's list these three guys out, Luka, LeBron, and Austin. What are the weaknesses of the trio, right? Like we know about the shot creation, the scoring, the passing, the IQ, the playmaking, all that stuff, right? what are the clear weaknesses of that trio as if you're trying to build out a five-man lineup? The two clear weaknesses are motor and defense. Defensively, they, I would say, are a below average trio together, to put it kindly. So you need then two high motor, high energy defensive studs around them. And I don't think the Lakers have gone about trying to build the roster that way. And they have.
No.
And now, granted, it's been, I guess, like one off season, and we'll see what they end up doing this summer. But I think this is where I look at the two guys that really stand out are Walker Kessler and Peyton Watson. They're both restricted free agents. They're both going to be difficult to pry out of Utah and Denver respectively. But with some of the stuff that's come out recently of with Kessler, ESPN had a report today that his market's projected to be around 25 to 30 million. With Watson, I think that there's been a couple reports where he's at somewhere in the mid 20s. Like, I would be willing to outbid their incumbent teams by 3 to 5 million annually to poach one of those two guys. And either one, I think, would solve a massive hole for the Lakers. So I just think they need to be prioritizing these guys in free agency and on the trade market. And ideally, it's like someone who's a really, really good defender who also brings a baseline level of offense, can be a double digit scorer.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I wish I had more faith in the infrastructure to build that type of roster, because I think one of my biggest takeaways watching the playoffs was like, imagine if the Lakers had even like two more playable, like really like who innings eater type of players. I don't think they're that far. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't even have Luka and they beat Houston, which, you know, immediately the media pivot was, well, Houston sucked. And it's like, well, you guys didn't think Houston sucked going into the series, because literally every single person picked Houston to win. So I don't think Houston was a championship caliber team, but they were certainly, you know, a playoff caliber team, and they could have been a home court advantage team. It was all the standings were like super bunched up. And they got through that series without much incident, without Luka. Then you get to round two, and it's like, I thought that they were miles apart from Oklahoma City going into that series. I still think that they're quite far apart, but I couldn't help but watch that series and think, well, they gave them runs for their money in spurts, you know, without Luka. Imagine if they had like a Jared McCain level player and I don't know, what's a good example? Like Jalen Williams, not J-Dub, Jalen Williams level player. You know what I mean? Like, imagine adding that to their rotation. And could they have spoiled that series with all those players? Like, maybe, yeah. You know, like, I still think they're far apart, but it's like, you never know. Like, you saw what happens in the playoffs. Like, OKC lost J-Dub, lost AJ Mitchell, and all of a sudden they look vulnerable, and the playoffs are that way. And so I think that they're far away, but I would caution them to not let how far away they feel prevent them from like going all in if possible, because you never freaking know what could happen in the playoffs. And if they had had just a little bit more help, maybe they spoil that series, you know? So I thought it was almost encouraging watching the playoffs, because I think during the regular season, I was like, even when the Lakers were like so good in March, I was just like, yeah, but they're so far away. And then I was watching it and I was like, well, they're so far away from a fully healthy roster, but you literally never know what's going to happen in the playoffs. And all of a sudden, you know, two of the like three guards that make San Antonio what they are hampered. Two key rotation players for OKC are hampered. If you get on the right side of injury luck, you never know, you know? So.
Oh, that's a good point. Like, I think obviously they were without J-Dub, which I think was a big loss for them in that series. But the Lakers were, of course, without Luka. So I think this version of these two teams at full strength, it would have been a 5-game series. I think the Lakers win one of the two games in LA, and then OKC wins in five. But yeah, to that point, I mean, I see your point, and I go back and forth on this, because I did feel like they were obviously close. Every first half was close. They were in several of those games deep into the third quarter, and then, you know, game four, they nearly won that game. They still need to add to me like some real starting level talent, like that. So that, I guess that's where it kind of feels for like sure. Far away for me, where I I don't think they're close. I think they have the top end talent that masks over some of the weaknesses, but like the fully functioning version of them that actually pushes OKC to seven or even wins the series in six or whatever, that to me is like, you need a couple of, not, we're not talking, you don't need the Giannis, right? But you need, I think, the Peyton Watson or the Kessler plus like another solid player. So we'll see if they're able to achieve that. But I just think that the Knicks model to me is like something that they should aspire to.
That's the most replicable one. That's the one that's closest. And we'll I don't want to spoil the rest of the takeaways from the playoffs, but like that's the one that feels like the most applicable to the sort of immovable objects right now. In my opinion, Austin and Luka are going to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Austin's leaving. I think they're going to pay him whatever it takes for him to stay. I think they see him as the two guard of the future. You know, I think they see him as part of the Luka Foundation. And so given that, you have to address those weaknesses and build around them. And I think the Knicks are a great example, to your point, of a team that was sort of self-aware about the weaknesses of their stars and was really smart and savvy about building around it. I'm just sort of like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater if you aren't able to like get, you know, exactly who you're after to fill those holes, because as long as you can be creative about finding guys with the right skill sets, even if they're not like your forever, you know, fit at that spot, I do think that you've shown, if LeBron stays, that you have the nucleus of a team that can give any of these teams a run for their money. And so like, don't just feel like, oh, we're so far away, we're not even going to try, I think is my point.
I 100% you know, agree like, with that.
Definitely try. Yeah.
No, I think they should try. My point with it being a potentially a multi-year build is like, I think they can still try and it not, them not succeed, because
100%.
I think you could be far more aggressive and be like, all right, we're going to keep LeBron, get Peyton Watson, and maybe that costs you Marcus Rui and Luke. And now all of a sudden, like, I like that starting group a lot more with whoever, you still have the room exception, and then you'll have some vet minimum contracts. Let's just say you get even like Robert Williams, and you go into next season, Robert Williams, which is a shaky proposition based on his health, LeBron, Peyton Watson, Austin, Luka. I love that starting group. I think that's a top four or five starting group, maybe top three starting group in the NBA. But the bench depth at that point is non-existent, and that would be really problematic. So I just think that they can solve the starters, or they could solve the bench. It's going to be really difficult to solve both. And because of that, it might end up being a bit of a longer build process. Let's move on to our third team here, the San Antonio Spurs. And my takeaway is doubling down on your strengths. And with San Antonio, what really sticks out has been they have a lot of similarity within their rotation. And I think that makes it easier to mix and match lineups and players. And so we're speaking in generalities here to some degree, but they have the three-headed backcourt monsters of Fox, Castle, and Harper. Those guys, you can play all three of them together. You could play them, one of them in a lineup, two of them in a lineup, and they all have different skill sets if we're diving into the minutia, but like in general, they can be lead ball handler, pick and roll player, attack from the perimeter, and they each have jumpers to varying degrees. Then you get to the Champagne, Keldon Johnson, Harrison Barnes, that part of the rotation. And those are all bigger wings / smaller forwards that can play three or four, can defend multiple positions. They shoot a bunch of threes. They can attack off cuts and closeouts. And then you have Wemby and Cornette, where I'm not going to put Cornette in the Wemby bucket, but he is a top five rim protector statistically, and it hasn't really played out in the OKC matchup, and he's been a liability at times, but at least for the regular season, it's like he is on the short list of guys that are realistic backups to be like a backup to Wemby and at least hold the fort down for 15, 18 minutes. So I really like the continuity within their rotation of, they have a clear identity of how they want to play. And this is almost like the inverse of OKC. And this actually might be more realistic for LA to attain of, we're going to have, you kind of saw this with Dallas in 2024, right? Like they had Lively and Gafford playing very similarly on both sides of the ball. And then they had the perimeter guys around Luka and Kyrie that all were mix and match, plug and play. So I think for the Lakers, this could be the alternative path of, okay, we're not going to have the 12-man rotation. We're not going to have all this depth, but we're going to have a really solid 8 or 9 players. And they all, like, they're kind of in buckets of 2 to 3 guys kind of do the same thing, kind of have the same skill set, and that allows you to have continuity across multiple lineups. What do you think of that approach? And is that, in your opinion, more realistic than OKC's?
I mean, I think anything is more realistic than OKC, because I just think not even just because they have the best GM in basketball, but because all of this is predicated on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander becoming the greatest player, either the greatest player alive or like a top 3 player alive and like multi-time MVP. And I think that it was fair to assume he was going to be really good when they did that Paul George trade, but like they had to get so lucky with him because they got so many picks in that trade too. So it was like, if anyone knew Shai was going to be the player he is, they wouldn't have gotten the pick that got them J-Dub. They wouldn't have gotten all these other picks. So there was some luck involved. And so I think you never want to try and like directly recreate something where a huge portion of it was being lucky, you know? And I think as much as I credit Sam Presti and his brilliance, like if Shai had projected to be like an Austin Reeves level talent versus like a Luka level talent, this could have all gone super differently. So just putting that aside, I don't think you can try to emulate OKC at all, really, besides just like they can all shoot and pass and defend. And like that's, you know, you want those skill sets in your players. I agree with you about San Antonio being maybe more replicable in the sense of like, if none of the guys on your roster are like perfect fit, if they can all sort of be interchangeable and do enough of the different things you need, then at least it gives you that sort of ability to withstand an injury or withstand like a bad defensive matchup or whatever. My takeaway from San Antonio is more so like they have so many important guys on rookie scale contracts, and in like a second apron world, I think it's even more important than it ever was to nail the draft. And mind you, like they got a top 4 pick 3 years in a row, and like that certainly helps. And like I think anyone would probably have an easier time if they had that many cracks at it at the top of the draft. But you know,
maybe not the Kings.
I think if you look back, yeah. Maybe not the Kings. Maybe anyone else, actually. But so I think that one of the takeaways for me is like, if you're not going to have your main star be a Jalen Brunson who is just selfless and willing to take a massive pay cut for the betterment of the roster, you need to be able to have at least either minimum or rookie scale contracts that fill out real rotation spots that you're actually getting minutes from, and you need to be like really great at identifying that talent. And so it's kind of a similar takeaway in a way from all three of those teams, in that I think part of what makes San Antonio so successful is that none of these guys will be getting paid anything remotely close to what they're getting paid now once their rookie scale contracts are over. They have several max level players, I think, on their roster right now. And they have De'Aaron Fox, who's already making a ton of money. And that's an embarrassment of riches that they just simply wouldn't be able to afford if it was later in any of these guys' careers. So I think their youth is part of what enables them to have a roster this deep. And when I look at the Lakers, I'm like, I think it's great you're building out the front office for more like scouting and analytics and all that stuff, because I think you are going to have to get a lot of those wins on the margins when your top two guys, if, you know, top three, if LeBron stays, are making a combined $100 million a year or whatever, you know, like if Austin ends up making 40, like that's, you're going to need to like hit a lot of home runs on the margins. And so I think San Antonio is a great example of like how beneficial it can be to have even two, you know, rookie scale or minimum contracts that are really providing a lot for you on a night to night basis.
I just don't have a lot of confidence in them nailing that. Final one here before we wrap is Cleveland. And this is a callback to the Knicks one, where this is protecting your stars on defense from the interior. So similar to the Lakers, I would actually argue this is more similar based on their personnel with Mitchell and Harden, and previously Mitchell and Garland. they're trying to protect those guys with the double big look with Mobley and Allen. That's one of the best 4-5 combinations in general, but also one of the best 4-5 combinations defensively in the league between their rim protection, their versatility, the athleticism, the defense. It's just an awesome 4-5 combination that I think was a big part of them winning those first couple series against Toronto and Detroit. And what they did to Jakob Poeltl, what they did to Jalen Duren, I think we saw the value in having those two guys playing together. So I think for the Lakers, this could be an alternative pathway of maybe you don't go the all wing path like the Knicks and say we're going to get all these high motor athletes, but you at least go the double big look. And it's like, okay, we're going to have a rim protecting center and an athletic mobile four who can also protect the rim, play some five and smaller looks and go about it that way. But I think either way, the point is just the Lakers have to add defensive talent to protect their stars. Because again, I think that the key to roster building is amplifying what your stars do great and finding ways to minimize their weaknesses. And I don't think the Lakers have built a roster anywhere close to doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. It's hard for me to feel like I take a lot away from the Cleveland build just because like, I don't think Cleveland's close at all, personally. I think they were like a total paper Fair. Tiger coming into the conference finals. And I don't think they would have beat anyone on the other side of that. Like, I would have favored Philly over them. I would have favored Boston over them. So, like, I thought Cleveland's ceiling was conference finals. And they made it because I was extremely low on Detroit. And I think, you know, if you look at who Cleveland faced on their way, and that's why I talk about matchups being so important to the conference finals, like none of them are teams that I thought even really had a prayer personally. So I agree with that. And I think that's a good lesson to take away from them. But I'm like almost reticent to take away too much from Cleveland in general, because I personally think they need to blow it up. Like, I don't think they're close. I don't think they have the makings of a championship contender. I think they're deep on paper, but I don't think they have a lot of the right, like, made up of the right stuff kind of guys to win a championship. And so, like, from a team identity perspective, I don't think they're close. I think Kenny Atkinson did a pretty terrible job coaching this playoffs. And so I would say, like, of all the four finalists, I would learn the least from the way Cleveland's done it, because I just really don't agree with the way that they built this roster.
That's personally why I say them for last. I thought they're the least yeah. interesting one. I think you ideally have a better balance there, and maybe it's one elite wing defender perimeter guy with one elite rim protector, and that's maybe more sustainable. In looking at Cleveland, to your point, like, there wasn't a lot to take away from like a positive yeah. sense. So I was like, I guess one thing that's kind of worked for them has been the double big look, which there had been questions about in the past. I think it worked against Toronto and Detroit. Did not work against New York, but I think that's something that the Lakers can at least try to do. And there's two different versions of how do you try to protect your stars. How you don't go about it is the Lakers' approach so far. So right. they gotta change that. Yeah. I think we covered pretty much everything. Was there any other takeaways that I know you had written down some going into this? Were there any things that we didn't touch on that you wanted to close with?
No, I mean, I think just generally speaking, like, my main takeaway from the playoffs is that all of the three real contenders, in my opinion, the Knicks, the Thunder, and the Spurs, are in part contenders because of outsmarting the cap to some degree, whether it's having a star player who's selfless enough to take a pay cut or having a bunch of guys who are playing way beyond their contracts, whether it's rookie scale or minimum or whatever it is. And I just don't think you can build a contender the same way you used to because of the second apron now and how punitive it is. And that is why I am encouraged by seeing how seriously the Lakers appear to be taking building out the front office this summer, because when you don't have all of those tools at your disposal, you just need to get really creative on the margins. And that's something that, to your point, I think they've failed at tremendously over the last several years. So would love to see more sort of creativity and ingenuity on the margins with those lower scale contracts.
I think that was perfectly said. I could not echo that more. And really the one way they could potentially do it would be a pay cut from LeBron James or Austin Reeves this summer, right? Because Luka is not up for an extension for a couple of years. So it's not going to be Luka taking the pay cut. And they don't have the draft capital or the draft resources right now to replenish the cupboard, at least not this summer, OKC or San Antonio style. So it's like, if there is one way that those three teams operated, it would maybe be LeBron or Austin taking. Now with Austin, it's a little trickier because him taking a pay cut actually doesn't benefit them at all, at least like now. It could benefit them in the future with the contract flexibility, but more so on LeBron, if he wants to take a pay cut or not. If he doesn't, then there's obviously a decision to be made from both sides. But I think my closing thought is you either have to build a lot more depth and versatility within your roster and rotation, or you need to find better ways to support and complement your core pieces. And I think the Lakers have done neither recently. They don't have the depth and versatility, but they also haven't done a real job in complementing their stars. And so I think moving forward, it needs to be a critical lens of like who fits and who doesn't. And then you go from there. But Claire, I appreciate you making the time. For those who do not follow you, I will be tagging you below in the show notes at Claire DeLune on X and your author page at The Guardian. Anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
Not yet. Just stay tuned to my social channels, and I'll be announcing a new project in the next like month or two. That's super exciting, but yeah, nothing else yet.
Big announcement coming that we are all excited for. Appreciate you and appreciate your time. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back later in the week. I will talk to you all then.